Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the first meeting of the PCAOB's Standing Advisory Group for 2011. Either the group is getting bigger, or I think we may have accommodated the group with a little bit extra elbow room. Hello at the other end of the table. We will certainly still be able to identify your 10 cards later on as you put them up when you take your turns to speak. So I think we do have a large room, but I think it'll still work effectively. The advisory group plays an extremely important role to the PCAOB in general, and certainly to my division, the Office of the Chief Auditor, as we develop our standard-setting agenda and our standards projects. And I just want to express my appreciation for that role that you play and the commitment you bring to coming to these meetings and the energy that you share at these meetings. In addition, as you know, typically now before each meeting, I've been reaching out and asking SAG members for topics that you think would be appropriate to discuss. And we really value that input, and I get messages from many of you as to important things we should be thinking about. And hopefully you'll see that over the course of this year, we've built those topics into our agenda. Today, we have the opportunity also to hear from our new board members and new chairman who are here at their first SAG meeting, and will shortly be turning to our new chairman to be making a statement. Let me just briefly take a look at some of the materials that you have in front of you, just so you know what we'll be working with today. Certainly you should have in your folder a copy of the agenda. I'll talk to that for just a moment or two. When I talk about the standard setting update, there's a couple of documents, the 2010 standard setting activities and the standard setting agenda that's in the folder. And then there are the various other briefing papers which had been sent out to you previously. I think you've had time to go through the materials, but just a brief overview of the agenda. As I mentioned, we'll go around the table in a couple of minutes, a traditional thing we do at the first meeting of the year, for everybody to introduce themselves. We have several new members of the SAG, and everybody can take an opportunity to say hello, tell us a little bit about who they are, and add whatever color you decide to the introduction. Then we'll hear from our chairman on an update on the PCAOB developments, Jim Doty. I'll give a standard setting update. After that, we have Larry Smith from the FASB here with us today. For the last couple of SAG meetings, we've been discussing the FASB-IASB convergence projects and the pace and volume and nature of change and the impact that it could have on auditing. And Larry has been agreeable to join us a couple of times, and so we'll hear from Larry after that. And Jay Hansen and Tony Lopez will join in that discussion as well. Over lunch, just for your information, Nancy Doty from our Office of General Counsel will give an update as ethics guidelines for SAG members. So that Nancy will be our informal luncheon speaker. This afternoon, we have Dave Landsuttle and Miles Everson joining us, and Lou Ferguson and Keith Wilson will lead the discussion as they have a project to update COSO. And as we all know, the COSO frameworks used by basically all companies in connection with their framework that they review their internal controls for Section 404 and 404 reporting. And we want to hear about the modernization of that framework and what impact that could have been to many preparers as they evaluate their framework in the future, and auditors as they evaluate those internal controls. We'll then turn to auditing disclosures. We all know disclosures play an ever-increasing role in the importance in financial statements. More and more qualitative disclosures are being added to financial statements. And as we talk about the changing accounting framework, many of the new standards that are being proposed depend to a large degree on the quality of the disclosures in connection with the new accounting standards. And we thought it would be a good time to take a look at the PCAOB's auditing standards, which have been updated substantially as part of the risk assessment suite of standards in connection with auditing disclosures. But we wanted to take that topic up and get your views on whether or not the standards that we have for auditing disclosures are appropriate or if more is needed. Dan Gelzer and Keith Wilson will lead that discussion. And then, as you all know, we've had several discussions around changing the auditor's report at this meeting in the past, at a recent meeting of the Investor Advisory Group, and at an open meeting of the board just a couple of days ago. Jennifer Rand will just take, and Steve Harris will just take a couple of minutes to introduce that topic. Jennifer will give a short summary of what we talked about at the March 22nd open board meeting. And then we'll really open it up to all of you to get your input on a number of questions we have regarding the changes in the auditor's reporting model. This would be really the last chance for the SAG to give us some input on that topic before our planned concept release on the auditor's report, which is planned for late June. So with that, that's a brief overview of our agenda for the day. I think it's busy, a lot to cover, and I appreciate everybody's involvement. At this time, I think it would be a good idea if we just did go around the table and take a moment or two to introduce ourselves. I should have said at the beginning, but I think I introduced myself last night. I'm Martin F. Bauman, the Chief Auditor and Director of Professional Standards at the PCAOB, and I'll move to my left. Oh, by the way, one other thing. These microphones, they work best if only one person has them light on at the time, so when you're finished speaking, if you can just turn it on to speak and off when you've completed. Thanks.
Greg Skates, also in the Office of the Chief Auditor at the PCAOB.
Tony Lopez, Deputy Chief Auditor.
Keith Wilson, Deputy Chief Auditor.
Steve Rafferty with BKD.
Gail Hansen, I recently changed jobs, and now I am the Chief Financial Officer of Aurora Healthcare, a $4 billion healthcare company in Wisconsin.
Wayne Collins, BDO in New York.
Dan Gelzer, PCAOB board member.
Kiko Harvey, Delta Airlines.
Lynn Turner, former SEC Chief Accountant and board member of a pension fund.
I'm Dan Slack, CEO of the Fire and Police Pension Association of Colorado.
I'm Bill Platt, the professional practice leader of Deloitte & Touche.
I'm Gary Kaber, Chief Accounting Officer of Xerox Corporation.
I'm Galen Hansen, a board member of the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy, or NASBA, and also an audit partner with Earhart Keefe Steiner & Hotman in Colorado.
Larry Salva, Chief Accounting Officer at Comcast Corporation in Philadelphia.
Jay Hansen, PCAOB board member.
Lisa Lindsley, Director of Capital Strategies at the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees.
Mike Gallagher, Leader of the National Office, PwC.
Denny Beresford, I'm a faculty member at the University of Georgia and Audit Committee Chairman of three public and one private companies.
John White, I'm a corporate governance lawyer at Cravath, Swain & Moore in New York.
I'm Daryl Schubert. I'm a partner with Ernst & Young Professional Practice in Cleveland. I'm also the chair of the Auditing Standards Board.
Diana Hillier. I'm here as the deputy chair of the International Auditing and Assurance Standards Board.
Brian Croteau from the SEC. I'm a deputy chief accountant in the Office of the Chief Accountant.
Larry Smith, FASB.
Bob Dacey, Chief Accountant at the U.S. Government Accountability Office.
Mike Auerbach with the Department of Labor.
Scott Sherwalter, Professional Practice, NC State University, and former retired partner, KPMG.
Joe Costello, University of Tennessee.
I'm Peggy Foran. I'm the Chief Governance Officer of Prudential Financial.
Lou Ferguson, I'm a PCAOB board member.
Neri Buxman, Chief Quality Officer for Standard & Poor's.
Kevin Riley, head of professional practice with Ernst & Young.
Steve Humza, director of internal audit, Legg Mason in Baltimore, Maryland.
Jim Cox, professor at Duke Law School, and I'm hoping to get some sleep after tonight's late-night West Coast game.
Jim Doty, PCAOB board chairman.
Jamie Miller, General Electric.
Jeff Mahoney, general counsel, Council of Institutional Investors.
Steve Harris, PCAOB board member.
I'm Barb Roper, director of investor protection for the Consumer Federation of America.
Sam Ranzillo with KPMG.
Arnie Hennish, chief accounting officer at Eli Lilly and Company.
Good morning. I'm Arch Archambault, partner with Grant Thornton.
Good morning. I'm Jennifer Rand with the PCAOB. I'm deputy division director and deputy chief auditor in the office of the chief auditor.
Jessica Watts, I'm an associate chief auditor.
And Jessica is responsible for most of the administrative matters around getting the SAG meeting organized, so thank you, Jessica, for all of that. By the way, we also have Mary Hartman Morris on the phone. Mary, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you. Good morning.
Thank you, and we can almost hear you.
Go ahead. Thank you. Mary Hartman Morris, I'm an investment officer at CalPERS, and my apologies for not being here today.
Thank you, Mary.
Doug Carmichael. I teach at Baruch College in New York, and I'm a consultant.
Thank you, everybody. Just one other administrative matter. Our practice here, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, whenever anybody wants to speak, and we hope it's often, please just raise your card up on the edge, and we'll make note of it. And although we'll tend to call on people in the order in which the cards were placed, clearly if somebody's made a point and you think you've got a point that's exactly on target on that you'd like to make as well, any other kind of signal can also be recognized, and we'll try to keep the dialogue going. Sometimes if we just take them in order, somebody's got a point that's very relevant to the earlier conversation, waits till another 20 minutes down the line. So it's challenging to do that, but any kind of signal that you really want to follow on exactly with that point can also be helpful. So with that, I think we're ready to move on to the next item on the agenda, which would be an update on the PCOB developments and our chairman, Jim Doty. Jim?
Thank you, Marty. Good morning. Welcome to the March 2001 meeting of the Standing Advisory Group of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board. I want to second Marty's remarks and thank all of you for taking the time to do this and to help us consider the pressing issues that are and the challenges that we have before us as a board. And we're all looking forward to hearing your views and to seeing participation in today's discussion. As Marty mentioned, since the group last met in October 2010, we've added three new board members. Jay Hansen, Lou Ferguson, and I all joined the board on the same day, February 1 of this year. And as Marty indicates, we thought it might be useful if we took a few minutes to update you on some of the things that we've been doing and to respond to questions you have about the board's work. I fully think that at the end of this, some of you, and if not many of you, will have some comments and questions for me and for board members. I'm going to touch on six areas, and I hope touch on and not belabor is going to be the theme. And I'm speaking only for myself, expressing my own views about these matters, and would invite you all to query other board members as the day goes on and query me at the end of this. First, outreach. Most recently, and earlier this week, the board held an open meeting to hear from the Office of the Chief Auditor on the results of the staff's outreach in our project to take a fresh look at the audit reporting model, the auditor's reporting model. The staff presented views and advice we had received over several months from numerous in-depth meetings with dozens of people using or preparing audit reports, including investors, auditors, preparers, audit committee members, researchers, and others. This outreach effort, especially in an early stage of a project of this significance, was unprecedented. It reflects a commitment to transparency, and I must say that among the many things that the new board members owe to the charter members departed and to the two incumbent members, Dan Gelzer and Steve Harris, have been a big help in focusing us on the help to the board and the help to the process of transparency. There was no concrete proposal to be voted on here. This was an opportunity for us to hear from many constituencies. We understand that some of the standing advisory group members attended or tuned into that webcast. We look forward to getting feedback today from members on both the usefulness of the format of the meeting as well as the subject matter and the details. Also last week, the investor advisory group held its second meeting. The group's first meeting was May 2010. Steve Harris has been a prime mover and an organizing force in this. We want to acknowledge his leadership. The group has been organized into some subgroups, some working groups. The first lessons learned from the financial crisis, global networks and audit firm governance, auditor's report on the role of the auditor. That's all part of a public archived webcast that's available on our website. The presenter's slides that were given to the board at the investor advisory meeting and other materials that were made available are on that website. We encourage everyone here who is interested in this subject, as you all will be, to take a look at that and to go back and review what the IAG presented. They were important issues, and we feel grateful as a board for the effort that went into it by Steve and by his committee members, his group members. There's also been a lot of work behind the scenes. I think it's, as there should be, all of our work has not been conducted in a forum or fora such as this. We have been working hard on standards, other rule proposals. Most of these are going to be covered in Marty's remarks later, and so we will wait for those, and I'm sure they will occasion lively discussion. A word or two about inspections. Let me start with that as one of the most important changes in the board. As you may know, earlier this month, Helen Munter became our Director of Registration and Inspections. Helen joined the PCAOB in 2004 as head of our San Mateo office. She's led one of our large firm practice inspections for several years. She has a proven track record at the PCAOB, having identified and addressed many of the highly complex and stubborn accounting and auditing issues that go with that territory. This is a critical time for PCAOB inspections. We've been identifying significant issues relating to the financial crisis. Valuation is much in our minds, valuation of complex financial instruments, the inappropriate use of substantive analytics, reliance on business processes, entity-level controls, where there may not have been adequate evaluation of whether those controls are appropriate. We're also finding new issues, and these issues may be a sign that our risk identification model is working better, and our own risk assessment is working better. We're hitting more targets. It's great to be better at hitting these targets, but clearly our long-term goal and our challenge is to reduce the number of hits and the number of targets. Some of you may have asked, and I think we have been asked, whether we have more findings today because we've changed our criteria for identifying deficiencies. And the answer to that is no. From its inception, the board inspection reports have identified in Part 1 those deficiencies that our inspectors consider to be of such significance that the firm failed to obtain sufficient competent evidence to support the opinion. That criteria remains in place. I would also say that Helen Munter is focusing on, the division is focusing on, and much attention is being paid to achieving consistency across the field of inspected firms in the way that deficiencies are identified, cited, characterized, and called to the attention of the firm. This is important, and we are not oblivious to the need to achieve consistency. The increase in deficiencies, of course, concerns all of us on the board. It concerns everyone at the PCAOB at the staff level, and I believe and hope that it concerns the firms as well. We are looking hard at trying to determine root cause of audit deficiencies. When we look for root causes, we're essentially talking about finding ways to improve audits going forward. And I believe that that is a process that is going to involve a two-way street. We're going to have good communication with the firms about what they do to correct deficiencies, and we're going to continue to be insistent on having the firms tell us and demonstrate to us that they're doing it. But so much for inspections. Let's go to say a word about international matters. We have approximately 900 non-U.S. firms that are registered with the PCAOB located outside the U.S. They are located in 84 jurisdictions. More than 250 of those firms are on what we call a triennial inspection. They audit fewer than 100 public companies. Some of the firms are massive. The firms are extremely large with thousands of professionals. Some of the companies they audit are enormous, major companies that trade in our markets. We have conducted inspections in 35 of those jurisdictions. That leaves, of course, about 50 jurisdictions in which we have work to do. We are in ongoing discussions with a number of the firms to remediate and to upgrade quality control concerns. Many of the firms we inspect are members of one or more of the large global networks of firms. And clearly our ability to effectively enhance the audit process in those firms is facilitated by knowledge of the strength and the weaknesses and an understanding across the board of the major firms that they are members of. It's no secret we have been shut out of some fairly important jurisdictions. There are 70 firms in 24 jurisdictions, including in the EU, Switzerland, and China, for which inspection deadlines under the statute have been passed in 2010, and we can't get in and inspect those firms. We're working to reach an accord that will allow our inspectors into those jurisdictions, and that's one of our highest priorities as a board. In January, we concluded an agreement with the UK authorities. It's a very good deal for both the U.S. investors and the U.K. It is not mutual recognition. It is a true arrangement of joint inspection, and it will result in both the PCAOB going in and inspecting two of the large U.K. firms, U.K.-based firms, and some of the smaller firms, and that is underway. We think that the U.K. agreement should provide a format and an approach in many of these other jurisdictions, especially the EU and Switzerland. We hope to make progress on a joint inspection arrangement with China. That progress is slower, as you all know, and unfortunately the risks to investors are every bit as great, perhaps greater. Last week, the board issued a research note on Chinese reverse mergers. It was prepared by our Office of Research and Analysis. It provided context and detail to the issues that had been discussed generally in Staff Audit Practice Alert number 6 that had been issued in July of 2010. The significance and the impact, I think, of that research paper, is that it identifies a trend, the trend of small Chinese companies seeking access to our markets through reverse mergers, triple the number of IPOs conducted in the U.S. by companies from China in the period studied. The PCAOB registered accounting firms based in the United States, the firms that are based here that audit Chinese companies, audited 74%, a little over 74% of the Chinese reverse merger companies. The China-based registered firms, a little over 25%. So that leaves us with a denial of access through inspection to right around a quarter of the audits that are performed on Chinese companies that are accessing and trading in our markets. If Chinese companies, and I've said before, and I reiterate, if Chinese companies want to get U.S. capital for the long term, and if Chinese auditors want to garner the respect of U.S. investors and become major forces in international accounting, which I think we understand is their goal, they need the credibility that comes from being part of a joint inspection program that is international and that includes U.S. and other similarly constituted regulatory regimes. And so we believe, something to offer China in this regard, and I think we're going to be pursuing that in the near future, and you'll hear more about the techniques that we will do, that we'll be using for that purpose. I should mention that we're well along with arrangements to implement new authority under the Dodd-Frank legislation to share the results of inspections with foreign counterpart regulatory agencies, subject always to appropriate confidentiality and limitations on the passing on of that information. It's very carefully monitored by our Office of International Affairs and our Division of Inspections, but it is going forward, and it should help us open up some of these markets. We hope to have some new announcements for you very soon about where we can now inspect. A word about enforcement. Since the last meeting of this group in October 2010, we announced the settlement and institution of two enforcement proceedings. One was the censure of a large firm manager. The other was a revocation of registration and a bar of an accounting firm and its principal. Those settlements, as you know, don't reflect the full scope of the enforcement work. The Division of Enforcement and Investigations continues to be engaged in substantial litigation, particularly in cases relating to some of the largest international registered firms. Earlier this month, we instituted a proceeding against a large firm and several partners, and that litigation is ongoing. And, of course, we do not talk about that. In order to have publicity of any of that, the board must find that there's a good cause for publicity. There has to be a finding of a reason for the publicity, and the parties have to consent to the public proceedings. That secrecy or that veil that shields the institution and the conduct of litigation has been the subject of substantial comment. It has a variety of consequences that are unfortunate. Interested parties are kept in the dark. As an example, in a recently announced case, the Gately case, the firm had issued 29 additional audit reports on public company financial statements between the commencement of the action and the public disclosure of the charges. So there's a period of time in which people who should not be in the auditing business are out rapidly accumulating clientele and issuing audit reports under essentially a closure protection from publicity. We should not wait for Congress to take this up. To this end, I intend to give some careful attention to the tools that the board needs to be effective in enforcing quality audits, but also identifying some other tools that other regulators have and have been used in the past and can be used, I think, responsibly by this board to maintain public confidence in the enforcement process. Oversight of broker-dealer auditors. Dodd-Frank expands our authority and our obligations, our duties, to include the auditors of broker-dealers. And they had previously been required to register with us in some cases, but until now they wouldn't have been subject to any inspection or oversight or enforcement authority. And that legislation will have a significant incremental effect on the work we do. Since the last meeting, the board has sought public comment on proposed rules to establish an interim inspection program, as well as to implement the Dodd-Frank provisions on funding. The purpose of that interim inspection program is to inform the PCAOB's development of a permanent program. So it's not a pilot program. It's not temporary, but it is an interim program, and we intend to use it to assess compliance with relevant laws and standards in broker-dealer auditors, broker-dealer audits. We intend to use it to form our judgments about what the appropriate ambit of exemption should be. We have exemptive authority under this statute, so we will be using it to determine where those exemptions should be carved out and how they should be expressed. And that will, of course, also reflect what we find about whether broker-dealers who are merely introducing broker-dealers and should not be holding customer funds and customer assets are, in fact, complying with that rule. This is a rule, of course, that is mainly about the safekeeping and the custody of client assets, and that's where our efforts will go. There are also standards and attestation standards that have to dovetail with the SEC's own rulemaking under 1785, and Marty will be talking about some of the intricacies of that later. Continuing issues related to the economic crisis. In December 2010, we published a staff audit practice alert going to what we saw and were finding in these areas. I know that some of you have not been hesitant to express your view about that to us. We encourage you to continue to do that. We will be continuing to look at the economic crisis and the particular phenomena that seem to lie behind that. And we are formulating internally the best way, the most efficient way of going about carrying forward an analysis, an investigation and analysis of what audit issues lie behind the economic crisis. With that, I think I will stop and express my gratitude to the chief auditor for doing this, for forming this group, and for attracting the kind of brain power that we have here and the kind of stature the group represents, and say that I'll be happy to respond to any questions or comments you may have that Marty gives you time for. Marty will recognize, of course.
The floor is open.
Jeff? Jeff Mahoney? I can't believe you don't have your card up. Yeah. I'm calling on Jeff Mahoney because I know he has questions.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wonder if you could expand upon remarks you made recently to the Securities and Exchange Commission Historical Society, where you touched on two significant accounting issues that will likely continue to have an impact on the auditing profession, fair value accounting and international financial reporting standards. With respect to IFRS, you indicated that the SEC cannot or require all companies to adopt IFRS while there are multiple versions of IFRS being used around the world. With respect to fair value accounting, you commented favorably on SEC Chairman Breeden's belief that fair value accounting promotes transparency and that the volatility that results from fair value accounting is better than the potential for serious misunderstandings and misstatements that occur with amortized cost accounting. As chairman of the PCOB, what would you like to see happen in these two areas, and how do you see these two issues impacting the work of the PCOB going forward?
I won't characterize that as a low blow. I will only qualify it by saying that those remarks were about a long ago period, and they were delivered before I had the benefit of the kind of intensive work with the PCAOB staff, which I've since had, and the commission staff. First, I've said I don't think that for auditing concerns, the concerns we have and the jurisdiction we administer, I don't believe that convergence per se should be a dominant goal. I think we have to move a step at a time and be sure that as we move from rock to rock, we have a firm foundation for what we know and what we're doing. I believe that it is certainly our intention, and it would be our duty to work carefully and closely with the FASB and the SEC to remain alive to their evaluation and their conclusions in the area of international financial reporting standards, and to be sure that our activities are synchronous with that they complement and they work. That our standards and the projects we're undertaking, the things we're doing, work given where the FASB and the SEC are moving. I think we will have substantial input. I think FASB and the SEC have both indicated that they are hungry for the knowledge that comes out of our inspection. And Mike Starr, the deputy chief accountant, Brian's colleague, has introduced a financial reporting series that will happen. And FASB and the SEC and the PCAOB will all be there. We will take up these issues of valuation. There will be a forum such as this. So, again, I think transparency is going to show how we're moving and how fast we're moving. I did read, before I had any idea of being here, the report, the interim report of the SEC on the work they had done on IFRS. I thought it was very informative. I'm looking forward to the next one, which I believe is imminent. That will tell us how far along they are in that area. So I think, to put it bluntly, I think IFRS constitutes a challenge for everyone, certainly a challenge for the audit profession here, certainly a challenge for the regulator of auditors. And we intend to be nimble and alert and to know what we're doing when we do it. Volatility, market value accounting. Volatility is, I think, still with us. Many of the things that we are looking at, I think, in our accounting standards as well as in our auditing standards will of course, be complicit in volatility. I do not believe that volatility is something that can or should be covered up or smoothed or avoided by accounting or auditing techniques. So we don't have as much to do with this, the accounting side, but I'm not a fan of the idea that we don't want to know the facts. I think we have to know the facts and understand what the facts mean in some kind of context. Is that responsive?
Thank you. Barbara Roper?
There are no trick questions in my... I wanted to make a quick comment on a couple of points. First, I want to congratulate you for the strong statements you made both on the foreign inspections and the enforcement transparency, building on the foundation that Dan laid during his interim chairmanship. Those are issues of very high priority for us, and I'm encouraged that you're moving forward on that. As you know, I'm a strong proponent of this issue of needing to do an evaluation of the audit issues behind the financial crisis. And I would just reiterate what you've heard from me before, which I would encourage that to move forward as quickly as possible and as comprehensively as possible for one reason related to an issue we're going to be studying today, which is that one of the things I think you are likely to find and have already found in some of the PCAOB's analysis in this area is that the problems increase as we look at auditing functions that are more subjective, based more on judgment, more qualitative rather than quantitative. And since many of the accounting standards that we're looking at in the report today seem to be moving more in that direction, I think we've already had a massive failure, in my view, of the audits of financial institutions, and we're moving toward a system that looks to me to be becoming a lot less auditable. So I would just encourage that analysis, both to look back and to look at its implications for how we're moving forward in some of these areas.
You may have put yourself on the same page with some of the members of the audit profession here present, but let me say on the financial crisis and the statements which you all made at the IAG, it is, I think, a pleasant surprise when board members come up with creative ideas that can be examined and implemented by the board and the staff. And I think Lewis Ferguson has begun a process of reflecting on how we might best continue to think about this question of what caused or what contributed or what may have been involved on the audit side in a way that would make it both efficient and useful to do it, and that'll go forward. And I think at some point, when Mr. Ferguson's ideas have been vetted and discussed, you'll hear about it.
Denny Beresford?
Jim, I'd like to congratulate you on the step of having the public meeting on the auditor's report, and I think, as you said, certainly it improves communications. Use the word transparency. Obviously, that's true as well. But it's really just kind of a baby first step, and having spent 10 and a half years at the FASB in that very transparent world, I think that the PCAOB should very seriously consider moving more and more, not necessarily to a full FASB type approach, but up until now, it's been very hard for constituents to understand what is happening on many of these projects. We get a little bit of feedback through this meeting and through speeches and so forth, but for the most part, projects kind of disappear for months or even years at a time, and you don't get as much feedback, perhaps in some cases, on things because of that. And I really think the whole process would improve if there was more transparency, if there was more openness, if there was more public debate of the activity, and I just encourage much more of that going forward.
Well, thank you. And Marty's going to talk about these projects that we have on the drawing board, the standard projects. I think none of us foresee any of that going forward without the same kind of extended process that we started on the audit report.
John White. First, let me echo Danny's remarks. I certainly endorse the transparency initiative that you was evident in the meeting on Tuesday. I thought it was terrific. I have to say, particularly for those of us who are not in Washington, the opportunity to feel like we're part of this is really a very useful direction. One thing I thought maybe you could comment on a little bit, many of the issues that the board faces today, and I guess I'm thinking among others, the auditing report, the auditor's reporting model, intersect a great deal with the SEC and with FASB. And obviously the SEC and FASB are particularly busy these days with Dodd-Frank and IFRS and convergence and a variety of other things. And I thought maybe, Jim, if you could comment just a little bit on how you see your interaction with both of them and kind of your outreach and how you're looking at all that.
Fair enough. We have a very close working relationship with the Chief Accountant's Office at the SEC. I think Jim Croker and Mike Starr and Brian Crotto and the other members of that staff have been very helpful to us. They've been available to us. They've encouraged us to speak with them. They were extremely helpful in getting the China reverse merger paper ready and accurate and ready to go. And I would expect that we will continue to try to be sure they know in advance where some of these initiatives might go, so that when they are exposed at a very preliminary and open meeting staged as the audited report was, the audit reporting model was before the concept release or at the time of a concept release, I think they will have heard about this. And the same is true of FASB. There have been discussions, conversations with the FASB, and we have insights we believe that the auditing side brings to the existing projects that are imminent, and those will be matters that we discuss with them. So I think we're going to avail ourselves of the accessibility of both groups and to be sure that we don't do things that are going to eat up time for them that are simply wasters of time for them.
I might comment that I think it's happened since we were all last together, but this new delegation of authority at the SEC mm-hmm. to Brian mm-hmm. and his colleagues to, I guess, sign off on mm-hmm. FASB standards, at least in my viewpoint, is a tremendous step forward.
Fortunately, they have regulated us with a light touch. The delegated authority has been used, I thought, very constructively and very well, and it's been a great help to us at the board.
Thanks, John. Thanks, John. Galen Hansen?
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on the audit report broadcast, webcast on Tuesday, as was. Thank you. I think that's long overdue that we're starting to see that movement. Also wanted to just sort of comment on the Chinese reverse merger research note. I thought that was absolutely terrific. I was, I don't want to reveal my nerdiness here, but being mesmerized by what was in that paper. And it was the type of thing that I think is very practical and very useful, not only the profession as a regulator, PCAOB, putting people on notice that the PCAOB is monitoring and looking at these things and considering and weighing the risks and the pitfalls of what's going on in an area that is rapidly becoming an opportunity for abuse. I guess my question for you, Jim, is do you see other sorts of information like that research note on other topics coming forward in the future?
Yes. the Office of Research and Analysis, I think, is exemplary in relating its research tools, its research capacity, its data collection to the actual mission of the board. So we are very fortunate in that the staff we have in AURA is reading what is going on in the board and in the accounting arena generally, and they are thinking of areas where their research can be employed to flesh out and to give substance and context and force to the issues that we're trying to get out there for the public. So I'm quite impressed that they do not regard their research as abstract. They regard it as and their research tools as abstract, but instead as related to the process of making this the inspection and the enforcement process more efficient and to inform the audit standard process.
Thank you, everybody, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, for that update. If there are no further questions of Chairman Doty, I'll move on to the second item on our agenda. And as mentioned earlier, that's an update on our standard-setting activities. A couple of documents that are in your folder may be useful as part of this, and that's 2010 standard-setting activities and the Office of the Chief Auditor standard-setting agenda, October 2010. This agenda in October 2010 was handed out at the last SAG meeting, and it is part of our goal of transparency to lay out in front of the SAG members the standards projects we are contemplating and working on, a timetable around which we're trying to operate, and then to seek your input on these projects and other projects that you think should be on the agenda. With respect to 2010, just very briefly, as I think you know, 2010 was a very busy year for PCAOB, Office of the Chief Auditor. In addition to the many ongoing longer-term projects that are on the standard-setting agenda, OCA issued many standards, proposals, and other guidance. And on that schedule, you can see we adopted 8 standards pertaining to the fundamental aspects of the auditor's assessment and response to risk in terms of audit planning, supervision, responding to risk, evaluating audit results, and audit evidence. And we think those standards are very important for future foundational standards for future standard setting. In addition, as you know, we proposed and discussed with the SAG a proposed standard on communications with audit committees and then later held a roundtable to discuss that standard. We proposed a standard on confirmations. We issued a concept release around the application of the failure to supervise provision of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act and solicited comments on ways we might implement improved lines of responsibility within audit firms. I'll be talking about all of those matters today. Jim also alluded to practice alerts, and we issued 3 practice alerts last year, one regarding significant unusual transactions. As was mentioned, practice alert number 6, which dealt with using the work of other auditors and engaging assistance from outside the firm, largely a result of the audits that were mentioned, the reverse-type merger audits where auditor signing off in the United States with virtually all of the work being done in foreign countries, largely China, and what the procedures are required of auditors in those circumstances. And then finally, late in the year, auditor considerations of litigation and other contingencies arising from the mortgage and other loan activities. So while we had a busy year last year, that's behind us, and we now look to what's in front of us. And I'll talk about our standard-setting agenda. One thing I hope is very clear to returning SAG members, and I think it's important as well to the newer SAG members, I think everything on that list, and I think if you look at our standard-setting agenda going forward, virtually all of these topics at one time or another, and in many cases on multiple occasions, were the subject of discussions with the Standing Advisory Group. To me, that's a tribute to how valuable we find the input from the Standing Advisory Group and how important we find your views in our standard setting. So thank you, and we really appreciate that input. With respect to the standard setting agenda, there were 15 items on it. We continue to work on the remaining 14 standard setting projects on the agenda. Item 1 pertained to the 8 standards that I mentioned previously. We've also added 2 new standard setting projects to the agenda, and I'll get to those during my presentation. So I'll give a brief update on various matters. First, I'd like to briefly comment on the standard setting timetable that's in this agenda. In general, the timelines for most of these projects will be moving somewhat further out. That's not reflected in this October agenda, but we will be updating the version in the near term, I want to reassure the board and those parties that are particularly interested in the auditor's reporting model that the timetable set for that, we're not moving that one at all. But there are a number of reasons why some of the projects on the timetable will be moving. There's several reasons, actually, and I'll just go over that briefly. First, based on our experience in issuing standards and proposed standards over the past 2 years, and as I think many of you know, we've become much more active in issuing standards and proposed standards over the past 2 years, we've learned that the process typically takes longer than we had hoped for or envisioned as we created this initial timetable that we published for the first time. Remember, our standards have the effect of law, and the timetable needs to reflect that. After my office drafts a standard, it's reviewed by all of the other PCAOB divisions from whom we receive input, then by each of the board members, then by the SEC staff. We receive valuable comments and insights along the way from all these various different reviews, but clearly all of the comments and insights we receive along the way are not the same. So we then have to work to reconcile these divergent views, redraft, recirculate, get comments again before we move forward with issuing a proposed or final standard. Given the importance of standards we develop, and I want to reassure everybody here that as we develop standards, we do give great importance to every word in the standard. And therefore, given that importance and the number of commenters, including then in the comment period and the analysis we go through from what we receive during the comment period, it's a very thoughtful process. It's a process that tries to take into account all of the various views, but also appropriately a time-consuming process to make sure we get out a standard that's appropriately reflective of the comments we've received. That's just one reason. Second, as you know, the board, as was just discussed, was newly reconstituted on February 1st with 3 new board members. The change in the board obviously has some impact on our timetable and our standard setting agenda. My office has been meeting with each of the existing or recurring board members as well as the new board members to obtain their views and concurrence on our standard setting agenda and to gain their insights as to what are their priorities. So as we address priorities of the new board, that will have some impact on our timetable as well. Next, I'll add that like any other company or audit firm, what's going on with respect to the FASB and the IASB convergence projects consumes a significant amount of our time as we're studying all of those accounting standards and considering auditability and other issues. Obviously, reviewing all of those new proposals and studying potential auditability issues takes time from time we'd otherwise spend in standard-setting activities. And finally, as you've noticed, with respect to the 3 practice alerts last year, and I think Jim made some reference earlier, or if he didn't, I'll make some reference, that We've increased our issuance of practice alerts. We intend to continue to increase practice alerts. We observe situations where we think there are audit problems, and that's a very important role that the board plays and we believe in the staff plays in getting practice alerts out to the public to deal with those issues and alert auditors to those challenges and what standards say. So with respect to all of those matters, all taken into account, we're updating our standard setting agenda, and as I indicated, some of the projects will move a quarter or two as we look at what we intend to accomplish over the next couple of years. We're in the process of updating that, and we'll have that out and discuss that at the next by the next board meeting, next SAG meeting. As mentioned earlier, we've also added two new projects to the current standard setting agenda. I'll comment on them very briefly. The first one is codification. We want to codify our interim AU standards, or those standards that were developed by the Auditing Standards Board of the AICPA, and which were initially, therefore, adopted by the board as its interim standards, with the 15 now AS standards, or those standards that have been proposed and adopted by the board. As of right now, we sort of have two sets of standards together making the board's overall standards. But now that we've adopted a significant number of new standards and many more in progress, requests for such a codification have increased. So we've added this project to our agenda, and this codification is intended to make our standards much easier to navigate and put them all into one common form. Regarding the second new project added to our agenda, we've been requested by the board to prepare a proposal for their consideration, which would require identification through the audit report of the names and extent of involvement of other firms that participated in the audit. We've heard from many investors about the importance of this disclosure for improved transparency into the audit itself. Two standard-setting projects, because of their importance, are on an accelerated pace, absorbing significant resources, and I'll comment on them briefly. They're the audits of broker-dealers and the auditor's reporting model, numbers 13 and 14 on the agenda. Let me first turn to the auditor's reporting model. Based on investor concerns, the staff has been highly focused on possible revisions to the auditor's report. As was mentioned in the earlier discussion, the staff conducted extensive research for the past few months and reported to the board in an open meeting on March 22nd on the results of that outreach. As many of you also know, there was a significant amount of outreach to investors by a task force of the Investor Advisory Group, which was discussed recently at the last IAG meeting. Investors are quite vocal, to say the least, about the real need for changes in the standard auditor's report, which has not changed in any substantive way for many years. We're working aggressively to issue a concept release on the auditor's reporting model by about June 30th. And this is a subject that we have on our agenda for a discussion today. Later on this afternoon, Jennifer Rand will give a short overview of this discussion that took place on March 22nd. But we're looking for substantive input from the members of this group on that standard-setting project. And as I said, an important opportunity for you to comment as we now sit down and write the concept release. The second item I want to mention that's on an accelerated pace and very important deals with the audits of broker-dealers. As was mentioned, Dodd-Frank gave the PCAOB various authority, including standard-setting authority, for the audits of broker-dealers. The SEC is contemplating rulemaking with respect to broker-dealers, amending its Rule 17A5. After the SEC releases its proposal regarding 17A5, we plan to release related proposed auditing standards. Our focus in this area is primarily related to the various compliance reports required under 17A5. We don't think the fundamental audit of broker-dealers' financial statements will require very significant or any standard setting, as it's similar to audits of other financial institutions. But the compliance reports are what is really important to investors with respect to the audits of broker-dealers, including such things as the safekeeping of customer assets, the many trillions of dollars that are held in safekeeping, and compliance by broker-dealers with net capital rules. So we've been working very closely with the SEC as they reconsider 17A5, so we've been able to try to draft our auditing standards to issue them in draft proposal shortly after the SEC releases its potential rulemaking. So this is one of our highest priorities, as the audits of broker-dealers will be transitioning soon from being performed in accordance with AICPA standards to PCAOB standards. Another project we are turning our attention to pertains to the concept release previously issued regarding signing the auditor's report. The board has asked us to draft a proposed standard on this matter for their consideration in the near term. Let me now turn to two other important projects on our agenda, the use of specialists and auditing fair values, numbers 7 and 8 on the standard setting agenda. In the board's 4010 report last year on observations of audits during the economic crisis, there were numerous comments pertaining to auditing fair values and using specialists, where our inspectors noted audit deficiencies. We've been digging into these findings, holding discussions with inspections and others to better understand the problems that led to these audit deficiencies. Issuers often use third-party pricing sources, such as pricing services and brokers, to value securities in their portfolios. As you may be aware, there's been an increase in the use of these third-party pricing sources by both issuers and auditors. Many of the findings in the 4010 report pertain to auditing fair values and how auditors used or didn't appropriately use these third-party pricing sources. So as the board moves forward with the standard-setting projects on specialists and auditing fair values, we believe it's appropriate to explore further the related practice issues and developments in this area. As a result, we've decided to convene an ad hoc task force of the SAG to study issues pertaining to auditing fair values and the use of third-party pricing sources. The task force will help my office as we develop new standards or other auditing guidance in this area. We believe members or selected members of this SAG, together with other investors, preparers, and auditors, as well as pricing services and brokers, all of us sitting down and working together as a group, can help get greater insight into the challenges in valuing complex financial instruments and auditing those complex financial instruments. So we look forward to this task force. We're planning to hold, task force members have agreed to their participation. We're planning to hold our first meeting in May, and we've asked the SEC and the FASB staffs to participate as observers to this task force. Although this will delay somewhat these two standard-setting projects, we believe it's far more important to be fully informed of all of the issues and developments in these areas before we move ahead with rulemaking. We think this will be a very important task force, giving an input on an extremely important project. In addition to the projects I've discussed, let me give a short update on some of the others. First, communications with audit committees and confirmations. I mentioned a moment ago that in 2010, with respect to these two standard-setting projects, we issued proposed standards. We've analyzed all of those comments received in those proposed standards, and we're actively moving ahead with standard setting and expect to ask the board to repropose or adopt related standards in these two areas during 2011. While both of these projects are important, I want to comment briefly on auditor communications with audit committees. I believe, and from the input we've received as part of that project, this is a very particularly important project, given the role of the audit committee and the enhanced role of the audit committee under Sarbanes-Oxley. Thorough, open, candid, meaningful communications by the auditor to and dialogue with the audit committee can significantly improve audit quality. This project, I believe, is very important. We felt the importance of this, and we had the roundtable to discuss it, and we're moving ahead with a standard-setting project on these communications. Let me turn to failure to supervise. In August 2010, we issued a concept release exploring whether the board should issue a rule or standard requiring firms to make and document clear assignments of supervisory responsibilities within the firm that have a bearing on the quality of the firm's audits. These responsibilities could be tied to the applicable quality control standards that the board has. We expect to provide the board with a proposed standard related to this concept release during 2011. Going concern. With respect to the financial crisis, a number of questions have been raised by investors about why red flags on going concern opinions were not issued more frequently, as many companies failed or would have failed except for government or other rescue assistance shortly after receiving an unqualified audit report. FASB has a project on their agenda which would potentially require management to disclose early warnings or adverse financial conditions that are, quote, reasonably foreseeable. We're working closely with the FASB and the SEC on this matter, and as we think of potential additional guidance or amendment to our going concern auditing standard, we will coordinate very closely with respect to the FASB's project and with the SEC. We recognize the importance of these kind of signals to the investing public. Another project on our agenda deals with part of the audit performed by other auditors. This was discussed recently by investors at our IAG meeting, and some concern was expressed about the work performed by foreign auditors on multinational audits. Views were expressed that network, quote, credentialing procedures, close quote, are not sufficient and standards have to be stronger regarding the supervision of the work of other auditors performing part of the audit. It was also noted that in many cases the operations and revenue of some MNCs internationally are as large as or larger than the domestic portion. Therefore, the work of other auditors is of great significance. We have a standard-setting project regarding part of the audit performed by other auditors, and I agree with the IAG, this is a matter of great importance. So our team is moving ahead expeditiously and making good progress on this project, and I expect we will be providing the board with a proposed new standard in this area by the summer. Well, I haven't gone through our entire standard-setting agenda, but I've touched on many of the important standard-setting projects, and I'll look forward to your questions and input in a moment. I also do want to comment, though, as I mentioned earlier, about practice alerts. We continue to see a number of areas where we think comments have to be made to auditors as to what their responsibilities are. In certain areas, we've observed in a recent announcement where trading was ceased by a foreign company, by the SEC recently, in connection with financial statements that may have been falsified, and some instances where we've talked to related auditors in that region where members of the financial institution where the auditors were trying to get confirmation may have been complicit in sharing false information with the auditor. So in certain markets that can be prone to corruption or bribery, we think we need to address a potential alert to alert auditors as to ways in which they have to achieve their confirmation of either cash balances, confirmations of receivable balances, in a way in which they can ensure that they're getting reliable information. So we're working on potential alerts in that area and in other areas where we see challenges. So at this point, let me open up the floor for comments on our standard setting agenda. John White?
Yeah, I was very pleased to hear that you're focusing on codifying the standards. That I think when you get to 15 additional standards, you've certainly reached the tipping point on that. but let me suggest another project along those lines. I suggest this, that I guess because I have a new audience now, since I think, Marty, you've heard me make this suggestion before. But that's on the practice alerts that you have. the practice alerts come out on at various points very quickly and get posted on the website. But I guess I don't think that they're the most user. They don't have an evergreen quality to them. And I would think that codification of the practice alerts in a way so that when auditors are looking for information or for guidance on the topics covered, that they can always go to an updated version of what the alerts are telling you. I mean, I'm thinking as an example, I remember there was an alert that came out in December of 2008, right in the heart of the crisis. And so that had a whole bunch of things that you were supposed to focus on at the time. I would ask the question, is an auditor supposed to be looking back at that 2008 alert today? Are all those things applicable? Are some superseded? Are there new ones that should be added? I'm just suggesting that if you had a codified version of the practice alerts, I think it would be much more helpful to your auditor customers. We did something similar to this in corporation finance where there were hundreds of interpretations out that basically put out by the staff that were recently codified. And I'd be glad, in some other setting to kind of go through how I think all that would work. But just a suggestion, since you're into the codification mode.
It's a valuable suggestion. And, John, I appreciate you bringing it up and mentioning it. And you raise certainly a good point with respect to are the audit considerations in the current economic environment in that particular practice alert still relevant? Well, we've given a number of speeches and told auditors they are. That's not the best way to do it. So your point is well made, and we'll consider how to implement that as we move forward with codification in general. Jay, did you have a point to follow up?
Yeah, Marty, I just want to follow up. I appreciate your comments, John, it reminds me of the old SEC staff training manual that you're referring to, and I have not directly talked with your staff about how much effort went into actually codifying that and keeping it evergreen, but I understand it was man years of work to do that and a substantial effort to keep it up to date, and so it's something we need to balance the resource needs. And I'm looking at Larry, and he's probably thinking, oh my God, codification, the bane of my existence with all the challenges that he's faced with the FASB codification. So I can appreciate the challenges with that. And one of the things, as Marty pointed out, we've got an extremely ambitious standard setting agenda. And Marty's team is down about three people from what the budget calls for in terms of three or four people in terms of his resources. And so, as board members, we're really good about saying, "Wow, this is really important. Let's get it on." But one of the challenges is we have to prioritize, and we're it's some of the difficult conversations we haven't had yet. Is everything is important, but what's going to come first? And so I appreciate putting that in the mix.
Well, I would just suggest you're kind of at the tipping point on this one as well. Every staff alert you put out, each one that comes out, you get kind of deeper in the hole if you don't start on it.
Thanks for those comments. Arch?
Thanks. Thanks, Marty. The task force that you mentioned on the fair value and third-party pricing services, where you're going to be pulling in pricing services and others in this area, I think is extremely important, and I'm really happy that you're doing that. What I'm curious about is anticipated timing on that, but do you anticipate, as that task force meets and considers different things, any interim kinds of communications to the profession?
I think the first communication I'd expect would be an update at the June SAG meeting. But I must say I probably haven't fully thought that through. I appreciate your comment that you're glad to see that we're organizing that task force. Clearly, many of our inspection findings have gone to the areas of auditing fair values. We've heard a variety of things when we speak to auditors and others about what they're able to get from pricing third-party pricing sources and what they can't get. We've also heard from pricing sources about what they believe they're making available, and we think getting all of the parties around the table can contribute to a better understanding as we update our standards as to what we should expect. So I agree with you. I think the project is a good one, and it will be important for us to get something out to the profession shortly. But our first meeting will be in May, and we'll move expeditiously on the project. Thanks. Kevin Riley.
Hey, Marty, quickly, picking up on Jay's point, the laundry list of stuff that you've still identified for activity in 2011 looks pretty overwhelming. So recognizing your front-end comments about the need to potentially defer some of these projects, which of this laundry list, which of these projects do you believe will need to be deferred to 2012 or later, or have you even figured that out yet?
We're working on revising this calendar. So the staff, I've sat down with the staff, and we've sat down with the board, first of all, and talked about board views on priorities, and sat down with my staff and talked about our timetable. And so we will be updating the agenda in the near term. I think the projects that I've talked about here today, I think I talked about them because we felt these were all important projects. So while they may move a quarter or two off from the agenda, they're still with respect to the ambitious things that we're working on right now. So maybe that's a good signal that the ones that I've talked about we're actively working on. Joe Carcella.
Marty, Marty, I would appreciate any insight that you could add or that Brian could add on the risk assessment suite. You know, those were obviously a major undertaking for the board. 8 standards, very important. And they were, if I'm understanding this correctly, adopted by the board on August 5th, 2010. And we're 7.5 months after that, and they're not yet effective. So can you give us some sense of where that stands?
They are effective, Joe. They've been approved by the commission, and they are effective for audits for 2011.
Okay, so the paper here is, I was just reading your handout. Doesn't it say that?
That was the paper that was handed out in October.
Okay.
Sorry, the paper that was handed out October 2010, which indicated in the fourth quarter of 2010 there were pending SEC approval, which was received. Sorry, I didn't point that out. But
okay.
Yes, that SEC approval was received. Those standards are in effect, and auditors in planning their 2011 audits should be now taking into account the risk assessment standards.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Damon Silver?
I just want to note that I think that your intention of looking at a series of interwoven issues related, sort of emerging out of the financial crisis is very welcome. In particular, I think your interest in the going concern questions, it's still unclear to me that it still seems to me no one really knows the answer to some of those questions as of today. It'd be useful to find out what the answer is. And I think that that issue is, at this point, completely intertwined with some of the issues around third-party evaluators that you're also taking up. And I would just say that I hope that the way that the staff looks at these matters is as an integrated set of issues as opposed to in isolation from each other.
Valuable points for our consideration. Thanks, Damon. Gary Kabrek.
Thank you, Marty. Two comments. One with respect to the overall the agenda. It is an impressive list. If you can accomplish most of it in the next few quarters, the staff should feel really, really good about it. And I think it's going to be a challenge to do that. My advice would be I would think long and hard about adding anything else to this list in the near term because there's enough here to deal with. And if you added something else, I think you'd really want to be dropping something else here. At some point, you have too much on the plate, too, and none of it gets done well or none of it gets done on time.
I didn't ask Gary to tell that to the board, but I appreciate your comments.
And I also strongly recommend we fill up those open billets in your staff that somebody had mentioned.
Lou Ferguson and it would stop taking some of my talented staff away from me, that would be helpful too. Thank you for these comments, Gary.
On the third-party pricing sources project, which I actually agree is a really good project, I mean, this affects more than just the auditors. I mean, the companies ourselves, we have choices of which pricing services you use, whether it's for your on-balance sheet investments or, in some cases, liabilities, or from your pension plans and so on. And we, a couple of years ago when FAS 157 came out, you spent a lot of time, well, do you have the right pricing source? Do they have DOE behind it, or they just estimates by the company and so on? So this will affect preparers as much as will your auditors. I mean, I can remember early 30 years ago, or auditing, you'd make sure you got a copy of the January 2nd Wall Street Journal for the end of your thing. You'd go down the columns, and there's your valuation. Those days are long gone in here, but this will affect preparers every much as well as auditors. And if you conclude the sources you're using don't really quite have the applicable audit evidence or they're insufficient of depth or whatever, the preparers themselves will be faced with a choice of changing. So I just want to say it's more than just an auditing issue.
Thanks for those comments. We feel it's an important task force and agree with those your observations greatly. Thanks. Scott Showalter.
Thank you, Marty. I have 2 points. I wanted to go back to John's point on the codification. I think that's a great idea. I'd also like to add a little more to that is access and searchability. As a person who's preparing the next generation of auditors, so those around the table in education, technology is very important to them, the way we research. And so I'm just not talking about the codification, but the practice alerts, the 4010 reports, there's a lot of really good information you put out that misses a lot of times a practitioner's eyesight. So not only think about codifying, but think how we get that information out there, because it's one thing to have it, but it's another thing not to know it's there. And there's some real valuable information. I'm often surprised when I go on your website and search around and find something, I go, that's really cool, I didn't even know it was there. And so if you can think about codification, but also distribution and how we get it out so people find that information, I would encourage you as part of the codification project to think about that.
Important comment. We spend a lot of time on these projects and the information and its accessibility is critically important. Right. So we will think more about that.
I had a follow-up on going concern. Just a question. The way I understood it, and I could have misunderstood it, was you taking the lead from the FASB. And I understand that part of it about the responsibility of the issuer to make comments, but there's also clearly some audit issues there. So is there anything in the short run you're doing to focus on the audit issues related to what the auditor should be doing? Or are you really – I was just listening to what you said. It appeared you were waiting for the lead from the FASB, so that's what I was asking.
Not exactly. I think as Damon pointed out, as I pointed out in my comments, investors have asked why was it that so many companies failed shortly after getting an unqualified opinion, and is the going concern opinion being used appropriately and in all the right circumstances? So we're certainly digging into that issue and trying to understand that better. But at the same time, FASB's had on its agenda the project that management should be the first parties to talk about any reasonably foreseeable challenges with respect to their future operations.
or their ability to continue. And they've been talking about some type of an early warning signal. So we are trying to coordinate so that we're not going in different directions. And the FASB and the SEC and the PCAOB have liaison meetings where we meet together. I think our next one is within about a week or so. And this will be high on our agenda of things to talk about together. So we are trying to tackle this as together, but we also are thinking about it at the PCAOB. Arnie Hanisch.
Yeah, thank you, Marty. A couple of points. First of all, I applaud the group for forming the task force. I think that's really important. I think it's important to bring together all the constituencies that might have a bearing on an issue and in one forum. I think that the outreach activities that the SAG has undertaken in the last 12 to 18 months has been very positive. I think it's important to create more forums where smaller groups of cross-functional views can be expressed and debated appropriately. And I think more of these task forces would probably create an environment where all of the issues and debate between the various constituents around the table, you know, can be appropriately heard. I also, one other point, I think that the agenda is quite robust. I think that it's probably the right things for the most part to focus on. I think the complexity of the accounting standards that we're dealing with from a preparer perspective then pour over to the auditors. And we ourselves have enough of a challenge to understand, implement, have the adequate have individuals that are adequately trained to deal with the issues that the FASB is providing to us, the opportunities that they're providing to us. I can't even fathom for even small, medium-sized auditing firms as to how they deal with the complexities of these issues to have adequate training for their individuals. Most of us around the table use Big Four firms. It's hard for me to fathom how these other firms adequately stay up on the complexities of what's evolving out of Connecticut these days. And I don't know if there's, as part of your inspection process, maybe there is, the ability to get in and adequately judge the quality of the training within the small, medium-sized firms to be able to adequately support the complexities that we're all having to deal with as preparers. And
those are good comments. Let me try to just give some feedback on them. I appreciate your comments again about the Fair Value Task Force. Dan Gelzer asked me at the March 22nd meeting about the outreach that we performed on the auditor's reporting model. Was that a model for us going forward? And essentially my answer was we are trying more and more on our standard-setting projects to get more information from the outside world not be insular in the development of our standard setting. So whether it's the type of outreach we did there, which may be appropriate in other projects, or task force when we're looking at specialists and fair value, we are trying to, or round tables on communications with audit committees, we are trying to, as much as possible in standard setting, reach out and get valuable information and input to try to reflect the views of others, as the benefit of this SAG does for us also. The reason on the other matter, on the amount of volume and pace of change in accounting, as I indicated, it's even affecting us as we sit back in our group and try to analyze all the new accounting standards and what the impact to audits will be from that, and do we need new audit standards in any area or different type of guidance because of what's going on. It's because of that that we've put this subject on the agenda as a regular item since June or so of, or July of last year, so in our three consecutive SAG meetings to talk about the changing framework. I agree with your observations that it's very challenging for certainly anybody, and the larger firms have told us they're spending a lot of time and challenged with the amount and volume that they have to absorb and comment on and then train their people, and certainly smaller firms would be challenged as well, something that we'll have to take into account as we think about the impact of changing accounting environment on audit quality. So it's good points, and we are cognizant of those issues, I think.
Marty, one other follow-on comment, if I can. I did participate, as you know, in one of the outreach sessions on the reporting model and look forward to the discussion again later this afternoon. I think as I reflected on that dialogue and discussion, it was a group of preparers together, and as my comment was made before, it would be helpful, I think, would have been helpful, and maybe this is the forum, or maybe it's probably not enough time to have another forum, but it would have been, I think, helpful to have a cross-functional group that could come together and have an adequate debate, especially given the passion that's been expressed by many of the investors around this issue, because many of the preparers are equally passionate around this issue, and it would have been good to have, I think, in a smaller forum, some reasonable debate.
Good point, and we look forward to your passion when we discuss this afternoon. Wayne Collins.
Yeah, I have a dispassionate comment or a question. On the principal auditor project, the IAASB has a standard ISO 600 on group audits, which I think addresses probably the primary concern that's been expressed here about what the oversight is by the principal auditor of the audits of the various subsidiaries of the parent company, even if they're audited by the same firms within the same network. Can I assume that the initiative, the project that the PCAB is undertaking will give significant recognition to those provisions?
You can assume that we've carefully read ISO 600 and group audits and are carefully taking that into account as we develop our guidance. Yes. Thanks, Wayne. Barbara Roper?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention briefly the issue of the broker-dealer audits, which is an area that I hope to get more familiar with. I haven't had a lot of chance to look at it. But one of the things that struck me, I completely agree with you that it's the compliance reports that are interesting in that context. And if you look at one of the areas where the audit firms do not appear to have covered themselves in glory in the recent financial crisis, in the robo-signing issues, we had a lot of documents filed in which the auditors attested to the mortgage servicer's compliance with precisely those things that we later learned they weren't doing. And so I think it would be valuable, and that is literally the extent. I mean, I've read a few of these. That's the extent of my expertise on this issue, so I'm not going to overclaim. But I think it would be valuable to include that in the issues that you go back and look at as you're looking at the issues around the financial crisis to figure out what was happening there, what wasn't happening there, how that compliance function is or isn't working as valuable input into the looking at what the compliance audits for broker-dealers should, because I think they're not identical, but they raise related issues about the kind of attestations that get done.
Thanks, Barbara. Damon Silver?
So I wanted to come back to the this question of, I guess, FASB's interest in some kind of early warning process with firms. I'm not sure not knowing very much about it, and perhaps we'll learn something more about it from FASB later, but I'm a little concerned that that's actually not what the focus of the work in the going concern area ought to be. I think it's this concern grew as I heard you repeat it the second time, what FASB and you were working on. I think you've got a couple of different questions here. That should be looked at. One is how it was possible, not in some sort of generic sense, but quite specifically, how it was possible to have valuations and loan loss reserves being where they were during 2007 in large publicly traded financial institutions. And how it was possible for the auditors of those firms to sign off on that. I think a second question is, once reality intruded on those financial statements and on those companies' cash positions, and several of these large firms became completely dependent in terms of solvency on the goodwill of the federal government, a goodwill which they had no contractual or statutory right to continue to receive. In other words, a goodwill that could be withdrawn at any moment. What was the implication of that situation for the going concern issue, which is not a question of voluntary disclosure and is not the burden of the preparer, but rather of the auditor? Right. And then the third question is, in the aftermath of these events, what does it mean that really nobody takes seriously the balance sheets of the large financial institutions today? That Gap financials seem to be almost irrelevant, for example, to the discussion that is now going on about dividend policy at these institutions. And you have major scholars testifying repeatedly in front of bodies like the Congressional Oversight Panel, major scholars like Simon Johnson, that essentially the published numbers are worthless, which would appear to undermine the whole system of financial accounting and of public company auditing, at least in the financial sector. Those seem to me to be the questions. And it's not clear to me that some notion of what I fear would be ultimately simply boilerplate in any case, some notion of some kind of generic early warning process is really the issue. It's not that we didn't have the structures. It's that no one followed them and no one did anything about it when they didn't follow them.
Thank you for that additional input, and hopefully with respect to at least the FASB project, maybe Larry will touch on the going concern, where they are at that during his presentation. I think your other comments we hear. A lot of them have to do with our inspection processes and other matters, and I appreciate your input, Damon. With that, I think we've heard from many of you about our standard-setting agenda and projects. I appreciate the valuable input we've received and generally your concurrence that we have important projects and a lot of projects on our plate, and we look forward to tackling them and getting back to you, all in the effort to continue to improve audit quality through our standard setting. At this point in time, we'll take a short break, and let's try to be back here about 10:30 for the FASB session. Thank you.